This is Joe Holmes from Pharmacos, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to, holy crap, episode 231 of Focus on Metal. Well, April is almost up here on Focus on Metal, and to round the month off, we have special guest Joe Holmes on the show this week. Some of you remember Joe from various bands around the LA area, and then, of course, his tenure with Ozzy Osbourne, as well as touring with David Lee Roth. And then Joe just went off our radar, and he stepped back and raised a family, and now he's back again with his brand new band, Pharmacos. And we are happy to have him on the show this week. So we had a really long talk with Joe, lots of good information, some good stories out of him. I think everyone's going to enjoy the show this week. But before we get to that, I just want to remind you that my buddy Bob Nalbandian has got his great film out on Metal Rock Films. That is, of course, the title Inside Metal, Pioneers of LA Hard Rock and Metal. And that's been out now for a few weeks. If you haven't picked up the first episode of that, I urge you to go to wherever you buy great DVDs and pick that up. That's the part one. They actually split the screener that Richie and I saw way back and the screener that they debuted around the theaters, split it into two different discs. And the first one is out now. The second one will be out in June. So two volumes of this great set of documentary flicks about the early days of LA hard rock and heavy metal. All kinds of great people on this, and because they split it, they also put a whole bunch of extras on there as well. So good stuff there. So do me and Bob Nalbandian a favor. Go and pick up a copy of Inside Metal, Pioneers of LA Hard Rock and Heavy Metal Part 1. And then in June, of course, we'll be bugging you about picking up Part 2. And of course, if you want any more information on that, you can go up to metalrockfilms.com. All right, how about a track of the week? So in all honesty, I wasn't even going to do a track of the week this week because I've just got so much content talking to Joe. But the weather's been getting warmer here in Boston, and that means car windows down. That means car stereos cranked. And that just ended up reigniting my excitement about a previous guest we had on and their brand new album. And of course, I'm talking about the band Night Demon. The name of the album is called Curse of the Damned, and we had Jarvis Leatherby on a little while back talking all about this, but just something that just adds to the whole flavor of this when it's just warm out and you're just cranking it, and it's just this great new wave of British heavy metal thing beating you over the head, can't be beat. And to kind of add a whole icing on the cake on that is that, last weekend I'm out, I'm raking the lawn, I'm getting it all set, I get the headphones on, I'm catching up on some of the podcasts, and I just happened to catch one that I totally missed that Bob Nalbandian did on the Shockwaves Hard Radio podcast, an episode he did back in February where he talked to Peter Baltus and Wolf Hoffman of Accept, but also he talked to Jarvis Leatherby. And I'll tell you, Bob's interview with Jarvis absolutely just kicks ass, blows our interview with him totally out of the water. Great interview that he did with Jarvis. And that got me all psyched up again about breaking out this album and just re-experience it all over again. And it just got me so psyched up that I said, I've got to do this as track of the week. Get everyone as excited as I am about Night Demon and Curse of the Damned. So no better way to get you fired up about this than for me to shut the hell up and play us some Night Demon. So from the Night Demon release, Curse of the Damned, released by our friends at Century Media. Great track here. This one is called Full Speed Ahead.
Oh,
nothing says summer like a little bit of Nawabum. Well, bikinis as well, but Nawabum and bikinis. And of course, if you're digging that, you can find out more about Night Demon at nightdemon.net. I know they've got some considerable touring activity going on here in the States in the spring and summer. So if you head up there and click on the tour page, you'll find all the dates. And if they're coming near you, definitely want to go check these guys out. Put on a great live show. And of course, while you're up there, if you haven't yet bought your own copy of Curse of the Damned, plenty of links there for you to go ahead and get that for yourself. So let's switch over now to our main guest of the evening. That is guitarist Joe Holmes. Guy had a pretty charmed career, getting some choice gigs with Ozzy as well as with David Lee Roth and some, you know, earlier bands that were pretty popular around the LA area. And as I said, then Joe just dropped off the map and he left the business, raised a family, and now he's back again with his new band, Pharmacos. And you can find out about those guys at Pharmacos, F-A-R-M-I-K-O-S, pharmacos.com. And there's also links to their debut album up there as well. But right now, let's get into the chat that Richie and I had with Joe Holmes just a few weeks back. And yeah, before we run it, I just got to let you know, you're going to listen to it and go, what's up with the audio on this thing? I know we have a pretty decent reputation for audio. I have no idea what went on with this interview because Joe came through, sounds really good. And then Richie and I sound like we're in a cement pipe. And I'm really not sure why. My suspicion is that there's this piece of vintage gear that I have in the rack here in the studio. And I think it might have just tweaked a little bit that night and made that interesting kind of reverb sound. Anyways, I apologize in advance for the sound of Richie and I doing the interview from a cement pipe. But really, come on. You listen to this because you want to hear what Joe Holmes has to say. And fortunately, Joe Holmes' end of the audio signal sounds freaking great.
All right, Richie, go for it.
Okay, listeners, we have someone on the phone that I wanted to talk to for a long time. And last year, I think Jakey Lee returned and Adrian Vandenberg returned. And this year, we've seen the return of Joe Holmes, and we have Joe on the phone. So how are you doing tonight, Joe?
I'm doing great.
I just want to go back a little before the record. You went on hiatus in the early 2000s for personal reasons. How difficult was that in the beginning to do? Because you hear a lot of musicians, like, they go home and within a month, a wife is telling them to get out of the house and go back on the road. So in the beginning, did it take a lot of getting used to?
For years I've been, well, even doing the touring with Ozzy and then David Lee Roth, and in between those and in the beginning, I was always so busy with music, always going to rehearsals, studios, this and that. So in 2000 was the last Ozfest that I did, and then there was some writing sessions for his next record, and so after that, and after I didn't do the record, I was kind of, you know, just, I ended up getting married, bought a house, and, I just wanted to take some time. I was always on my guitar, but I just wanted to take some time of being, just hanging out at home and doing other things, you know? I mean, I got offers. There was other opportunities for me to go to check out other bands. They called me after Ozzy. And at that point I was like, I wanted to basically, if I was going to do anything, to either come back doing my own thing and, you know, doing a record, I would have had to been a part of the record. I wouldn't have just went out and done a tour after that point with anybody. I wasn't going to just go do that again. It would be, if I was on the record, and then I would have, went out and did it. But, so 2001, when that happened, all this whole time I've always been playing guitar, and it actually might've been a good thing with the fact that, you know, I really focused in on a lot of things. Like, I feel like my playing right now is really, it's grown a lot, you know, and doing all the touring was great for me because, you know, there's no better experience than live, you know, getting to get out there and play, and especially getting to do the Ozzy stuff, you know, with was an honor to do the play, getting to play the Randy stuff.
Yeah.
And then actually doing the David Lee Roth was such a great experience for me because, you know, I was always brought up on the Randy, and I was brought up on, I was really influenced by Michael Schenker in high school. The Strangers in the Night record, that was really a big, big record for me. And, you know, so it was, I got to come hanging out at my house. I was always always just sitting around fiddling and playing a lot of guitar, writing tons of riffs. I got a bunch of riffs sitting around. And some of the stuff that's out right on this Pharmacos record, you know, is riffs that I've had for a while. You know, and it's just stuff like, actually, you know, the Fragile, do you know that one?
Mm-hmm.
That actually was a riff that I wanted to show to Dave back in the day, like after the tour was done, doing the Dave's tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they handed me a cassette of like five, like there was more blues songs to go in the studio, and you know, they never even heard one of my riffs. So I never, and I had been storing a bunch of like old Van Halen, my versions of those of what I, you know, what I wanted to do, you know.
Yeah.
So anyways, that song was around. Am I One is new. That was just recently, but I love Am I One. Is really, he's got that spirit of the Randy stuff, you know, and that's actually the direction that I would have liked to have done for, like, if I was an object, where I would have pictured the style that I would have loved to have done. We'll be right back. So anyways, a bunch of these riffs, I was around here playing a lot, and I ended up, you know, I was at that point where, too, I wasn't getting any younger, and it was like, with me and my wife, it was like time to, if we were going to have a kid, it was now. So I had my daughter, Haley, and she's 10 now. But I was like, for the first 4 years, I'm not going anywhere. I don't care. I don't want to tour. I want to stay around here.
Yeah.
And then my dad, which my dad always was my biggest supporter, used to drive me to my Randy Rhoads lessons. And, he sold his car to buy me gear, and was taking the bus to work. He ended up getting, dementia with Lewy bodies, and he broke both of his hips and they didn't work. They popped out, you know, so he was like crippled, and it was me and my sister that were, you know, around him every day, you know. So, and he passed away like 3 years ago. But even when he was ill, you know, I'd go see him all the time, and he'd still be asking me about my music, and you know, he was the best with all that. He used to come to my shows, and you know, he'd be watching me playing, telling me play with more feeling, you know, because I'd be flying off, you know. Trying to play as fast as you can back then, and he's like, you know, he really loved Michael Schenker. Play with more feeling, and he was just the best.
Yeah.
So that's basically where a lot of this time went, you know. Which I wish I now, after putting this one out, I should have put records out from back then. I should have just been popping some records out, because you know that would have been. It's great to actually, for me, with this record. It's already a success to me just to have an idea to finish it and put it out, especially with no, you know, I funded it. Nobody, there's no big machine behind it. It's all grassroots, and it's cool because it's spreading. You know, it's really been a great experience.
Yeah. Now the album's been out a little while now. What's your initial feedback been on it?
The feedback's been great. I mean, I'm really. I'm so proud of it because listen, I could listen to it and there's nothing I could actually honestly say I wouldn't change anything on it. And I've left every note, like in the beginning, if you listen to Scapegoat right before the solo, you'll hear it go, and that's my tubes blowing up, the arcing. I mean, the studio got up. Yeah, he thought they caught on fire, and it didn't really, but it lit the room up. And those tubes, I kept those tubes in the amp, never wanted to change them because I thought it was going to change the sound of that amp, and that was always my favorite amp.
Yeah.
I had these old Siemens tubes, but I ended up, after that, putting new Siemens in there, but old new stock, and it sounded actually probably even better, so I should have done it years ago. But, so, like, I left every noise on there, and, you know, you'll hear even the sound of my gun at the end of the solo, the first solo, you'll hear it go, I do a dive bomb, and you hear the strings hitting the pickups, and gone, and probably you would edit that out, but we kept everything, you know. So,
yeah.
So it was, you know, really, just really, I'm real proud of it. There's nothing I would change on it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. When with leaving all that stuff in there, it adds that cool vibe that all the other old albums used to have too, where you know they wouldn't edit out like the fingertip against the string sound and stuff like that. Now they get rid of all that, and I miss that kind of stuff. So it's great to hear that.
It's really cool too, because I mean, I got to still let this one run its course a little bit, but I've been working on, I've got a whole bunch of riffs, but I got five that I've been really focusing in on the last couple of weeks that, really stronger. I'm excited about. So like this one that I played it for Robbie over the phone a couple of weeks ago, and he said the hair on his arm stood up, and it's really cool, sludgy and heavy and just really got a great feel to it. So there's a whole, you know, it's gonna be fun. I'm looking forward to, you know, just being creative, and
yeah.
I'm thinking maybe you may put another, let this go for a while, let it keep building, because you know we need it to still, you know, we need it to run its course and to keep growing, and people to you know, with this band, it's at the infant stage, you know, and we need to get more of a demand so we can get out there and come and play, because I would love to come and tour. And these songs live are just going to slam. I mean, even this, I play them on my Marshalls over here, and man, they sound heavy. They're going to be even heavier live.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, Joe, is that personally, I didn't really know what the album was going to sound like, because even though you've played with David Lee Roth and with Ozzy, you haven't really written much over the years. I think you did one Ozzy track that you played on, and then you have three tracks that Zach played on on Down to Earth. And then when I put on the album, I was like, holy shit, this is, it's a fantastic record. It's my opinion. It's really, really heavy. It definitely has the old school rock, heavy rock vibe, but it definitely has a 90s influence on it as well. I can definitely see that as well.
Yeah.
So,
and too, you know, because I always have people say, you know, about like Soundgarden or Alice in Chains, and that's because Robbie's voice has that sludgy, it has that, you know, soulful but ballsy, which I love those singers and those bands and stuff. But I mean, if you had someone else sing on it, it'd probably sound something different too, you know.
Yeah. Where did you get him? He's amazing.
And that bizarre little sound was Skype cutting us off. Seems like a good time to play a little more Pharmacos. This one is a track called Scapegoat.
Robbie from, he's an incredible singer.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, I'll take you back to 2002, because this was a really major part of this record too, is where I get my guitars worked at is Eric's Guitar Shop. I've been going to him for years, but Brent Hoffert was working there, and I became really great friends with him, and I used to hang out with him all the time. And he's a really well-read guy, really deep, man. Like, if you listen, like Scapegoat and Existential, that's his lyrics and stuff on that.
Wow.
And so anyways, I talked him into singing, and I said, hey Brent, why don't you sing, and so we worked a lot of these songs out, you know, like, yeah. There's like eight of them that he, you know, was a big part of. And so, you know what's really cool is a song like Spoon and Sun, those are Brent's verses, and then that's Robbie's chorus, and then like Kings of Dust is sort of the same sort of way. So it just really, married the both worlds together, worked out really great. So so around 2002, 2003, we were messing around doing this stuff, and then I ended up having Haley, just kind of, you know, it was never like doing a band thing yet, you know, it was just just working on songs. And then, oh gosh, like three and a half years ago, my friend that works at LA Sound Design knew about Robbie, and Robbie was in a band. So he told me, so I didn't go after him, but he told me about him, played him for me. And then, I think 6 months later, my friend Dave called me back and says, "Hey, Robbie's out of there. And then I called Robbie up and just started sending, he's from Arkansas. I started sending him stuff back and forth. And the first song he sent me, I sent him Sound of My Gun, the music, and he sent it back to me. And that's when I knew right away, like, okay, this is on, you know, this definitely sounds like the guy that, you know, that I need on this stuff.
Yeah, I think the track that I think really highlights his range is Kings of Dust.
He's singing on that
from low to high. It's just incredible stuff.
Yeah, from those lows and then, just getting up there where it's, you know, it's going to, throat's about to explode, you know?
Yeah, I think bringing him on tour now and playing live shows really sort him out.
Yeah, you know what's cool too is it's just like, it's really, that's why I'm really looking forward to doing the next one too, because it's really gonna, you know, we're like a well-oiled machine now, like even the studio where I'm going and the way we go about everything. So it's really going to be fun and, just keep growing and keep getting that sound where it's Pharmacos, you know, where it's going to, people will know it's Pharmacos.
Yeah. Now, how difficult was it to get Rob Trujillo to play on it? Because Metallica in the past have been a little bit difficult to get, you know, to allow their members to play on outside bands.
Yeah, well, Robert, see, what's cool about that, too, is and we have just such a great chemistry together, but I've been working with Robert now since the Ozzy days, and some of these riffs, like I said, were done back, when did he get into Metallica? What year?
2000 and, just after Saint Anger, I think.
When was that? Like, what year?
2002,
you know?
I'd say.
Yeah, so...
I know. I hear all you guys screaming. It was 2003. I know. We got it. We try to blot Saint Anger out of our memory. You know what I mean? I will note, though, that the DVD that comes with Saint Anger that has the guys playing all that stuff live at headquarters sounds way better than the actual CD itself.
You know, maybe he might have already played on... He's played on, like the Fragile song was a song that I had that riff, and then back... it was around that time, around 2000, that... we had worked it out and wrote it with Benji, because that's Benji's Webb, you know, Benji from Kindred?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he's the one that we wrote that with him. So he wrote, like, the lyrics in that one and melodies, and then we just threw Robbie in there with him, and it was just a great fit, you know?
Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about the last track on the album, Facing East.
Okay, yeah, and that one, man, I love about it, too, is, man, people are digging on that. And
yeah.
I just want to write, you know, whatever the songs come out, I just write the songs as best what I'm proud of, and then you put it out there. But I'm glad people responded to that, because I love all the old records when guys would put acoustic songs on there, you know?
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like anything else on the album.
No, and
it's,
you know,
a perfect end to it.
Yeah, you said trip about that is, that's been sitting around. I used to play that for my... kind of wrote it when my daughter was born. I used to play it for her all the time when she was born. I'd always be sitting there working it out and playing it for her. So it's got this, like, lullaby thing, you know?
Yeah.
But it sounds timeless, and it's really cool. It almost sounds like it's an open tuning and stuff, but it's not. It's got some really great, do you guys play guitar at all?
Yeah, I do.
He does.
Yeah.
I don't.
He just comes over here and goes, "What do you need all this crap for? You keep getting more of it. I can't help myself."
Yeah, if you played it and stuff, there's a lot to it. You know, it's a really great song. So
yeah,
so I'm really proud of that one. And then, it's a great way to end the record. You know.
Yeah, Joe, you sound like you've got a lot of material written. And was it hard to get it down to the 10 tracks on the record?
Well, what was that? I didn't.
You sound like you have a lot of material that you've written over the years. Was it hard to, like, narrow it down to the 10 tracks on the album?
You know, with me, I'll just throw a bunch of riffs at it, whoever's, like with Robbie, and I'll, you know, whichever ones really are sticking, and then you just focus in, and you'll know, which ones. Like, I had this batch going, and then, you know, I just kept on working on them until they, like Scapegoat, that song went through so many changes. Actually, if you listen to it, there's not even really a chorus in that song, you know?
Yeah.
It it's just a verse and stuff. But man, I mean, if you would have heard some of the different versions of that song, it, you know, went through a lot of different little changes. But yeah, I got a whole bunch of ideas. There's a whole bunch of ideas. I'm hoping maybe in June sometime to start going back to the studio and starting to put stuff to click tracks and stuff, and just start mapping it out we're in a unique situation too, like how you were saying about, like, with Robert and them, because I could even keep the same chemistry going to do the next one, or if I find the right bass player and drummer, which I met with a bass player earlier today, if I find the right guy, you know, then I would, you know, have them plan it, so there was more of an incentive too, you know, because I want it to be a band, you know, and a couple of guys that I really do like a lot that I've recently met, they're in multiple bands, so it's like, I understand that they have to do it to go out there and try and make a living, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So the one thing I have to say as well, Joe, I've got the actual physical product, and you can't beat the CD. The actual layout is pretty good, like the picture of the studio when you opened it out, and it's got the lyrics and the picture and all that. So you've done a really good job on the actual physical CD as well, I think.
Yeah, thanks. And Robbie's from Arkansas, and he has a friend, Dean Wheeler, that did the layout, and also Robbie. Robbie and him did the layout and artwork of the record. But he had that picture. He sent it to us, sent it to Robbie a long time ago, and then I saw it, and I said, yeah, well, let's put that up on our, you know, we put it up on our Facebook and on our website, and that kind of picture, now when you look at it, it kind of really just, you think Pharmacos anyways, it's kind of really made a mark, you know?
And while we're thinking Pharmacos, how about playing a little bit more Pharmacos from the debut album from these guys? This one's called Ascension. When you listen to this one, imagine David Lee Roth singing this one. That's the first thing I thought of when I heard it. Would sound really cool with DLR singing it. But then again, it sounds really cool with Robbie Locke singing it too.
I just want to go back a little bit, Joe. Once I have you on now, I'm going to go back and talk about a little bit about your time with David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about the audition process for someone like him. When you did the audition, was there like a waiting room of guitar players, and like what do you remember what you played in the audition?
Oh yeah, and there was a line outside. It was at his house in Pasadena, where Van Halen rehearsed and stuff, down in his basement. Do you know about that place?
No, I don't.
Oh man, incredible. So I ended up, I was playing in a band called Tariff around LA, TERIFF, and we were playing a lot. And, and Greg Bissonette heard about me. I think Fred Corey, you know, from Cinderella, he told them about me too. He mentioned it to them. So anyways, I got a call. I went down and I was standing in the line. I don't know how many people, maybe 15 guitar players or something. And actually they were auditioning some guy downstairs or whatever. And then Dave walked up and came, I don't know where he was going, maybe to one of the other houses or something. He walked up out of the whole line. He walked up to me and he goes, "Hey, what's your name?" And I said, "Hey, I'm Joe." And I had my amps that I still have to this day, like I was telling you about the tubes. I probably had the same tubes in that head from back then. I actually did. I brought that Marshall head because Jose Arriondo.
Oh, legendary guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He did all my heads. I have Marshall heads from him.
Everybody wants those heads then.
Oh man. Yeah. I cherish them. I'm sitting in the room staring at them right now.
I wish I was staring at them right now.
They're my babies. But, so I was standing on that line with them and I said, "Hey Dave, I've got the, you know, the Jose amps and got that tone." So he goes, "Great, man. Well, I'll see you down there." And I went in downstairs when it was my turn, and I went in there and I played the first song. I think I did was Panama. Hmm. And then I did Yankee Rose, and I did Half a Gigolo. And he stopped it and he said, "Okay, man, I heard enough." And you know, I felt good because when I was doing Panama, you know, I was in there playing it and. You know, I could see him smiling and stuff, sitting up against the wall. So, you know, it felt good. Although I was cotton mouth, you know, I needed water or something. it was a lot of fun. So I did that. And, then I heard that after it, they cut the line off and they went and had, there was a Mexican restaurant or something down the street. So they, after I auditioned, they got rid of the other guys. They didn't hear anyone else.
Okay.
Wow. And you know, Jason Becker was there and playing too downstairs in the room.
Okay.
When I first got there, he was like sitting up against the drum riser, which amazing guitar player.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, just so such a great guitar player. So it's just, you know, it's a shame, you know, sad.
Yeah.
That, you know, just a bummer, man. Really great guitar, and I didn't know he was sick or anything, and I didn't know because they actually had another guy named Gezi. At first, they wanted to try two guitar players, and I don't know if it was because Little Ain't Enough Records, Steve Hunter and Jason Becker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much Steve Hunter played on it or whatever wrote, but so I didn't really know that it was you know what it was going to be, what was going to be the outcome of if they were going to have just Jason or two guitar players or what it was going to be, but. But yeah, he really great player, you know.
Yeah, so
I love that record, man. He just was really incredible.
Oh, it's a great album. Yeah.
Showtime, that was a challenge, you know, learning those licks, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
Tell me about the rehearsals for that tour, because, you know, David Lee Roth is one of the best performers on the stage, and I actually saw that tour. Now, I actually might have been at your very first show.
In Scotland?
It wasn't. I was at the one in Dublin in Ireland. It was. I think it was one of the first couple of shows on the tour.
Yeah.
And I remember it had the boxing ring, it had the amps, it had the female microphone, it had everything. One of the things I remember about the show, Joe, was you came out and you really got me, and then Rot did the spinning kick and he fell flat on his face, he slipped.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, but. Like, tell me about the rehearsals for that. Like, how intense is it for Dave?
Man, let me tell. First of all, was there two guitars in the band at that point, or was it just me?
No, it was two. I can't remember the other guy. I know Todd.
That was Desi Rex because.
Oh, okay.
He did a half. I mean, maybe did five shows, and then they ended up deciding they wanted to do one guitar, which was pretty nerve wracking because we worked these parts out for two guitars. So I remember the day when he said that that they were going to. That they were sending them back and they were just wanted to do one guitar. I was like, oh my God, man. you've got to be kidding me. But the rehearsals, man, let me tell you, it was such a great experience. Dave is so smart, man. And he turned me on. I'm so grateful because he turned me on to really open my eyes to the blues, you know, I really, I mean, I remember even when we were touring Europe, he would say, "Hey, Joe, learn Blue Jean Blues, you know, by ZZ Top." And I would try and learn it as authentic as I can, man, and we'd play it at a sound check or whatever. Or even one time, he made me learn a Clint Black song, the country guy, right? And I'd be like, "What the heck am I learning?" I mean, put it this way, when I was learning Gigolo, I almost threw the guitar out the window because, man, I learning those jazz chords. I'm sitting there listening to the record and trying to listen back and forth and trying to pick it off, and you can't really hear with the guitar. And
yeah,
but after I'm done learning it, I was so grateful that I had to learn it because it really helped me a lot. And rehearsals were intense. I mean, they were really, I had to learn so many songs. There was a chalkboard and there were just, you know, all those records I had to learn. So
yeah,
I was in boot camp, let me tell you. And we were at probably Dave's house in the basement for a couple months, and then we went to there was a place called Perkins Palace in Pasadena.
Yeah.
And then it was called the Raymond Theater. Really old place. It's incredible, great place. And we got to rehearse in there with like the setup for I forget how long after that too. Maybe a couple months and. 6 weeks or something, or a couple months, and then we went to a hangar in Burbank, an airplane hangar, and with all that, because, you know, you're on that tour, there was a bunch of marshals up in Europe too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all that, you know, it was a huge...
Even back then, like even now when I think of it, it was still one of the loudest concerts I've ever been at. It was so loud, like, it was just, everything was just over the top, it was every rot.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was just a really great experience. And, you know, my guitar tech back then, because we're talking about the Jose's and stuff, was Rudy Laren that did Eddie in the beginning years, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
So it was just, man, it was a really good learning experience for me, man. It really, really was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do want to ask you a question about Dave, because you probably would have had all these preconceived notions about the guy, but was there one thing when you got to know him that actually surprised you about him? When you got to know him, like, was there one thing about him that surprised you about him that you went, "Whoa, wow, I didn't expect him to be like this"? Or
for one thing, with the blues, he was like a encyclopedia, man. He was just so just a very smart. Just smart, really. He was a great guy. I had a great experience. Really had some really great one-on-ones with him, you know.
Yeah.
Hanging out with him.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked to somebody else too that had worked with Dave,
and Jimmy DeGrasso.
That's right. We said to Jimmy.
He said he had a great ear.
Yeah, and he didn't even realize this guy's not listening. And then Dave would just they'd walk off after rehearsal, and Dave would just mention, "Hey, you dropped the beat there. You did this," and he was like,
"Yeah, he used to
know
it this way." He's like in Hot for Teacher, when it goes to the real clap up, he'd want it dropped so low, and I'd get it to where he wanted it, but then sometimes, like, it was so low that Bissonette behind me would be like, "Man, it's got to come up a little bit," or whatever. It's hard to cue for the other guys, but Dave would know if I turned it up even slightly.
Yeah.
Oh, he knew, man. He knew. Yeah, he really knows his stuff.
Walking around.
want to just go forward a little bit, Joe, to the Ozfest tours that you did.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of a lot of the bands on the early bills? And or like, did you get to really like them after you heard them? Or
oh man, yeah, man, that was also a great experience because like, you know, I got to meet so many really, you know, great bands and guys. And you know, and when we're talking about like doing, when I was telling you, like when I got out of Ozzy, I always envied and always looked up to the bands that were, you know, opening up, getting to do their shows, that had been doing their own records and out there playing. And that was always my dream. I always, back in the early days in Tariff and stuff, I wanted those bands to make it and to do it. That's what I was, you know, I never really was going the route of the, and I'm glad for those two gigs I did, the Dave and Ozzy, those were the two that I was an honor, and I would have, you know, there's no way you're going to turn down, you know, you're going to, But you know, there's experiences like, you know, put this way, like hanging out with Dimebag and Pantera, yeah. And was just great, man. And I actually, you know, I used to do these warm up drills, and Dime would see me doing them, and then he would show, hey, this is what I do. And to this day, I still do his warm up drill.
Nice.
I still do his warm up drill, and you know, and even, you know, like in one of Ozfest. The last one, you know, Zach was out there with Black Label Society, and man, he really treated me like really great. And I had to play, you know, it's kind of weird for me because I'm up there playing, you know, some of his songs, No More Tears of Mama, I'm Coming Home, and he'd be on the side of the stage with, even with Dime, you know, and you'd see those two guys over there, and then you're like, forget playing for the crowd, you're playing for, you're on top of your game for them or whatever. Well, you're playing for the crowd too, but just, you know, really opened his arms and treated me, you know, really, really great. So I got to meet some really, really great players and bands out there when we got to tour with a lot of people.
Yeah, I used to be bummed because I was back in Ireland at like the Ozfest every year. It really only used to tour the US. And
yeah.
It never really traveled. And I was like, ah, bummer. I was like, because it had such a, it was like, to me, it was like some of the festivals that we get in Europe, like the Wacken and the Grasshopper and all that. It was such a diverse bill that, and it was good value for money as well. And it was, you'd had a great day out. You could have like 15, 20 bands or something on three different stages.
We did, was it Milton Keynes or something?
Okay.
And the Download Festival, the
Donington.
Donington, yep.
Yeah.
We did those ones, which were great. Yeah, I wish we could have. I wish, like, especially, I loved all the lineups, but the lineup with Robert and Mike Borden, man, we had a really good band there.
Yeah,
it was a great band. So that would have been, it would have been a lot of, I wish we could have went over there and played. And then even the last one with Brian Tichy was really a great, great lineup. They all were really cool. In the beginning, I got to, when I joined Ozzy, you know, it was, I got to play with Geezer, and that was just amazing. You know, I put it this way, I'll never forget that too, because when I went to talk about rehearsals, when I went to after I got the gig, when I was in there rehearsing with them, because when I auditioned for him, it was Mike Inez and Randy Castile that auditioned me for that gig. Mm. After that, and then when I got in there, Geezer and Dean Castronova were playing, but I remember going in there and having my amp cranked on like 10, and God, he blew me out of there. I couldn't, it was just like the next day, I had Matt Brock. He works for Van Halen too. And, for Eddie, and it's been for all these years, and he was helping me get my live setup going. So I remember him bringing like two H&H power amps the next day. The next day I had this just wall of sound, but I talk about loud. It was loud there too.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know Zach's always been known to be kind of just a really open, welcoming guy. Do you think maybe it pushed it over a little bit on the top that because he kind of looked at you and saw this kind of direct lineage right from Randy and through you, and maybe he was kind of like, wow, this, you know, like the closest he was ever going to get to Randy?
No, he was just, man, I'm telling you, like, he even gave me a pickup. He goes, hey, you got to try this pickup. He was just really, and you know, I mean, I love Zach's playing too. It's like, and I really respect him and like how he keeps putting records out every year.
Yeah.
So I wish I should have, back when I got out of Ozzy, I should have focused in and just at least been putting some records out. But it was, you know, it was, everything happens for a reason, and you know,
yeah,
it's all good. And you know, I never put my guitar down. I was always, I'm a student of that thing. I'll be playing it till forever, you know?
Right.
I just, I'm always trying to work on something and better myself.
So I want to ask you about the writing sessions for the Down to Earth album. You've got three songs on it. Now, were you originally supposed to play on the whole record, or were you just brought in to write a couple of songs to see how it went? Because the songs on the album are that you wrote, they're very strong. Like, the two of them ended up on the Live at the Budokan Live album that was released just after that.
Yeah, you know, see, back, you know, for me, when I look back at it, my time when we should have done a record was when I first got in there. We toured for like 16 months, and I wish right after that somehow we could have done, you know, that would have been the time, because I know we were just, you know, everything was exciting and the whole band. But then after that, we started doing the Ozfest, and then I don't know what year, like 98, he went and did the Sabbath thing too,
yeah,
right?
The reunion tour, yeah.
And then weren't they writing for that? There were just times where there was gaps, periods. One time, I don't know what year it was too, around then, he went to Japan, and Zach and that lineup, the No More Tears lineup, went and did Japan and Australia. So when it came time for the 2000 tour, you know, at that time, I kind of, you know, I didn't know whether I'd be a part of whatever it was going to be, you know. I feel like we really, me and Robert, I feel like we came up with a bunch of really great ideas. But there were so many other people putting in their bids, man. I mean, one day I'd be in there, next day another guy would be in there. There were so many different people, you know, sending in songs and producers and whatever.
Yeah, it's when you look at that record, I think it's a good record, but it's got a lot of writers on it.
Yeah, and see, for me, like I was saying earlier, you know, I was, especially at that point, I'm to the point where, you know, if I can't write the, you know, I wanted to be a part of the record of, you know, of writing a whole record and, you know, sitting down and just hashing it out until you do to get it together, you know.
But
you know, just to go play other people's songs, that's like I'm saying, like it's out of Ozzy, I got a call from other bands that were out there doing it, and that, you know, just to go, it wasn't really for me. And I'm proud of, you know, the stuff, like the three songs, and I'm glad Zach got to do them, and I had no issues with that. Like I said, when I, you know, I'm doing the Oz Fest and he's over there, Zach had such a great connection with Ozzy that, you know, there's no, I'm not, you know, no, there was no hard feelings or anything.
Yeah.
And it's his trip. It's Ozzy's band, you know? So
I know, yeah.
You have to look at it like that, and you just got to put all that aside. And I'm grateful that we got three songs on there. But like I say, when you listen to Am I One, like, you know, Am I One on the second song on this record, the Pharmacos?
Yeah, the 9-minute track.
Yeah, that's got that Randy, trippy, eerie thing. And that's kind of the sound that I could have pictured, you know, that I would have wanted to go.
Yeah, so just one final question for me, Joe, before we leave you go. I have to ask you for one crazy Ozzy story and one crazy David Lee Roth story.
Oh, jeez.
I always finish with the easy questions.
Oh, gosh. Man, you know, people think there's a lot of crazy things. There really wasn't that, you know.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm surprised at? Like, you know, you always hear with Dave, he was getting in shape, always, you know, and Ozzy, too, on his exercise bike, you know, drinking, you know, water and, you know, trying to stay fit to be out there, you know. You think that's a big party.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know.
Just a lot of work.
Yes, it was a lot of work. But there are two totally different guys. Like, with Dave, you know, he had a certain look, and you had a clothes lady that took you around and got you, you know, had a, you know, what you were wearing and stuff. And then with Ozzy, you know, I remember the first show with Ozzy, I said, "Hey, Oz, what do you want me to wear?" And he goes, "I'm not your effing dad. Wear what you want." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." I mean, he was just, Ozzy was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy. It was a great experience. And that's why, like, when I talk about it, my experience more with the whole album and writing thing, it was more, my experiences were more of the touring. It really wasn't with the whole, you know, recording, you know, album thing.
Yeah.
But they did. They treated me really good when I was out there. Ozzy, Sharon, everyone. And I loved my time there. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Is it sound good? I don't know. We'll be right back.
know, you had an amazing run there for a couple of years of just, I mean, just primo gigs that anyone probably would have killed for. So it's,
yeah,
it is very cool. And I think what's really cool, though, is that after, you know, not having you around for so long, you've come back with something that's just so strong. And, you know, I know one thing that Richie's always had a thing with lately is what he calls these super groups or these labels that put together these people and they make an album and they never really seem to like have a feeling they're going to do anything else. But what's cool about yours is that it's, you know, you're definitely sound like someone who really does want to get that really that band together and get out there and really get the music live to the people. And I mean, you listen to this album, you definitely hear live all over it.
Yeah, and that's my goal. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. You know, it's like it's a different business out there. So hopefully it, hopefully people go out there and spread the word and support it, because so we can do it. But you know, it's I mean, that would be the ultimate, to get out there and, like I was telling you earlier, like you see these other, like I see these other bands opening on these shows. Mm-hmm. I would love to do that with my thing.
Yeah,
it would be really good, and I want to put together a monster band. I've been spoiled with the guys I've been playing with it. You know, and having Robert and all these guys and Brooks in there, Wackerman playing drums, and this Ken Schrock, that it's got to be up to that level. You know, there's no way I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. So, Joe, where can people reach you on the net? Do you have a Twitter or Facebook? All those good things.
Yeah, the Facebook thing. You know, we're getting more and more active on that, and with the Twitter, Facebook, there's a web page, and you know, people could buy it through Amazon or CD Baby. That's the way we've been doing it.
Right.
We've been getting contacts from labels. I've had like five labels contact us, but I don't know what more they're going to really do for us. There's no stores to put it in compared to us putting it out ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So you know what? We're building it up. It's growing. Maybe we'll get the right manager behind us that could get us to the next level. We'll see where it leads to, but we're excited about it, you know, and I'm really happy with with just the response it's got.
Yeah, well, I think, Joe, the album's brilliant. Honest to God, it blew me away. I didn't know what to expect from it, to be honest. And
yeah,
it's a bit of a grower as well, and I think all good albums are, to be honest. But it's a fantastic record.
Well, the next batch, I mean, if you heard these next ones I'm working on too, like I got this one slow, sludgy one. I wish I had a name so I could tell you so you could remember what I'm talking about. But, man, I mean, it could end up being another 8-minute song. I have no idea, you know. And you know what's great about it? There's no rules. And when I go in the studio and doing this stuff, I have nobody telling me, I get to do whatever I want, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, true.
You know, and it's real simple setup, man. All this stuff that you're hearing is just, it's my Jose plugged in, you know, pretty much straight. I use, you know, whenever you hear like an effect on there, I've got this old Neutron flanger that I love.
You're killing me.
Yeah, that's been my like secret weapon. And, you know, through my amps aren't too preamped out, so I've got a Lexicon, the PCM41s, mm-hmm. and I use a little DB boost in the back of that. And I've used that like that for years, so I'm just so used to it. And I've got a Tycho Brahe Octavia that I got two of those, but I have the end of sound of my gun. It's like, you know, the Hendrix type of vibe, the Octavia sound.
Right.
That you know, that's like, and that's like the spirit of that to me, because I the end of that song, you know, I just, it was supposed to fade out pretty soon. We just kept letting go. And I didn't want to fly off at all. It was like, I said, you know, just milk the notes and just the amps. I'm telling you, they sound like they were going to explode in the room. it was like riding a wild wave, you know?
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, definitely some classic gear there. Just, yeah. And all that stuff too. That's the stuff now that people are just absolutely dreaming about getting their hands on, is that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then I always used, at the studio he has, and I have him here too, but, there's an old cabinet there, like late 60s, maybe 70, with old greenbacks in there, and the old 25 watts. And just with my Jose's, they just sound amazing. And my guitars, you know, they're all, you know, pretty, you know, simple setup. You know, the guitars I was using, you know, that I've been using for forever now.
Right.
Still got my old Charvel that I've had since the 80s.
Yeah, I noticed that when one of the videos, and I was like, ooh, Charvel, because, yeah, through a big chunk of the 80s, that's what I was playing, was a Charvel as well. And it's always great when you see one of those pop up again. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then I've got these early 70 Strats that are set up like my Charvel. It's got the compound radius, you know, with the Floyds, and I've mounted the pickups, those Jackson J80s.
Mm-hmm.
They're old, I don't know, from the 80s. Not the ceramic. If you're going to check them out, get just the regular Jackson J80s. But I remember back in the day, this is another story I'll tell you real quick, when Jose was doing my amps, one of the Kramer guitars, those Eddie Kramer guitars, was in there, and man, the guitar, but I think it was basswood or something, it was lighter than mine,
mm-hmm.
but the guitar just sustained and just sounded so great, and I was like, Jose, what pickup is this? And it was a Jackson J80, and so, anyways, that's what I've been using forever now, too.
Yeah.
And you know what, I'll tell you one, too, I just threw up in the neck position a couple weeks ago, and I'm totally digging on it, is the DiMarzio solo, the virtual solo.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, is it a stacked, you know, a single coil or whatever, but that sounds almost like a P90. It's really balanced with my Jackson J80s, because I was always searching for that, so yeah. Anyways, I've been really digging on that lately.
Yeah, that's been my thing lately, is I ended up getting a Gibson Melody Maker with P90s, and I've just been loving the sound of P90s all of a sudden.
Oh, I love them. I love yeah. P90s. I got to get a guitar with P90s in it, too.
Yeah.
I know they're just real responsive, and I love the way they react to the amps, you know.
Yeah, and they play nice with effects too. That's part of what I like too, is they just really responsive with the old analog effects.
That's the trick too. It's all combinations. Like I had to go through so many pedals just to see what even worked with my amps, you know, because certain ones just don't.
Right.
But yeah, you know, that's it. I'm about to quit, and I'll tell you, but I you know, because my Mutron flanger I probably won't take out because it's got a cord too, and I just want a battery. But I tried one of these Ibanez, the old, what is it, the 301s?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old yellow orangish flangers
yeah.
from like the 70s.
So for you gear purists, of course, the stomp box that Joe is referring to is the FL301, which was produced for Ibanez by Maxon, just like the old classic two screamers and stuff like that. It's another one of those great old Maxon pedals. So again, it is the FL301. If you are a Joe Holmes completist and want to get as close to his sound as possible.
And that thing is really cool, real psychedelic and transparent. So I'm digging on that too.
Yeah, there's a new one out. There's a company called Subdecay, and they make a flanger that actually will let you select the waveform and stuff too. There's a lot more stuff you can screw around with that one. And sometimes you can dial in just what you want on it.
And then another one that I dig on, and I don't use it that much. I used it only on a couple. Well, I didn't use this wah, but it was an old box. But I used a wah on a couple parts, so I don't know. Maybe I'll bring one out. But I love that the RMC wahs, the Real McCoy Customs.
Yeah, yeah.
But the brand new one. There's a new one. I don't know what the model number is. I'm looking at it right now, trying to tell you. But anyways, this thing is great, man. I love the way this thing sounds.
Yeah.
You know what? I did use it on, I think I did use it on Scapegoat.
Yeah.
I might have used it on that. I used it on something. I did have it at the very end. But anyways, it's all combinations over here. Believe me, I'm still always checking out things too.
Yeah.
That's never ending either, you know.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know. Yep. Yeah.
I get my friends over here and we will do these, you know, these sessions where we're A-B-ing this and that and just like,
yeah. And the latest thing I got in was Electroharmonix came out with this B9 box, which like emulates an organ. And I ended up getting the C9, which is the latest one they did. And you know, any of that stuff never tracked really well, but this brand new, the B9 and the C9, they track. And I'm kind of more sloppy, Jimmy Page, Joe Perry kind of a player. But
I love that. Yeah.
They track brilliantly. You can mix like Hammond B3, like right behind your guitar line, and just dial in a little bit. And then when you really bear down on your pick attack, however you vary it, you're able to do those like chord stabs and stuff. And it's all of a sudden the organ stab jumps out and go back on the guitar line. I've been having a blast with this thing.
You know, it's funny you're saying that because there's like three of these song ideas that I want to experiment and maybe put some Hammond on this next batch too.
Yeah, you should check them out. The B9 has, I think it's like seven different types of organs, and then the C9 does there's like a John Lord patch on it. There's one that's more like an Emerson, Lake and Palmer, one like a Doors one. There's a lot of really usable stuff on there, but you know, knowing how you play around with your pick attack and all the dynamics, it's a blast. You can really make this thing do some great stuff for you. And it's also, you can dial it back and just have it so you're like, wow, this where's this chord vamp coming from kind of a thing. So, yeah, I've been having a blast with it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, there's an old Hammond down at the studio, and I was like, man, I could picture it on a couple of these tracks, maybe trying it and seeing.
Yeah. It even does, you know, depending on how when you do the modifiers on it, it's pretty easy to dial in, but, you know, there's different mods on it, and you can make it kind of do more of that, like the click sound that the Hammond does and stuff. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, if you guys were out here, I'd let you come on over. We could have done this in person, and I could have blasted the Marshalls.
I talk gear for hours. I think I talked one night with Chris Poland about gear for like 2 hours straight, just nothing but gear. But
Are you in a band?
No, not anymore. I just, same kind of thing, kids, and I just was like, I just want to stay home with the kids and stuff. And now I've just got back to more, you know, recording, engineering, you know, consulting with bands, producing, stuff like that.
Yeah, good. Well, I mean, and these days, like, you can do what we're doing, just put it out there, and it's really great. Actually, my daughter inspired me to want to put stuff out anyways, too, and you know, I'd like for her to come get to see me play live or something too. So
yeah.
That's she's at that age, 10 and a half, where she's you know, really into it.
Awesome. No, that's good. Yeah. So we're psyched about this album, and I got to say, and definitely, if you got more stuff coming out and you want to come back on and you want to talk about that, we'd love to have you come back on. And like you said, I mean, this is grassroots. It's just people working together to get the word out. And, you know, that's why we're here, is to help get the word out for artists like you and let people know that you're back and you've got great tunes. And,
I appreciate it. Believe me, I really appreciate it, because that's what's been working for us anyways. Do you guys play music on your...
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yeah, because maybe too, I could, you know, but what I did too is, you know, I met Eddie Trunk at Jakey Lee's show a couple of years ago. I always heard that he'd always mention on the air, someone would call in and he'd go, hey, if you ever know what happened to Joe, you know, and he'd always say nice things. So I saw him there and I went up and introduced myself to him, and I started sending him songs this last year, and he was playing them on his radio show too. So
nice.
So, you know, maybe you could do that too when I start doing this next batch. It's still going to be a little bit of ways away, but
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm at the you know, beginning stage where I'm going to start, you know, chipping away at it a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. No, that'd be great. But we're definitely looking forward to hearing more stuff out of you.
Yeah. And it'd be great to, you know, grow a little bit more, to get out there and get to play and do it for real, you know, out there and tour and play.
Cool. All right.
Step by step though, you know?
Yeah. I know. I hear you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate all the time you took tonight talking to us, and we appreciate the hell out of that. And
I appreciate it.
Awesome.
You guys got to keep doing what you're doing too. We need that. These days you need it.
Oh, yeah. I know. I hear you.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, great, man. I appreciate it, you guys. I really do. And yeah, keep in touch with me too.
Okay.
No problem, yeah. I'll be around and we'll talk again.
All right, Joe.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
There you have it, our talk with Joe Holmes. And again, you can head up to pharmacoast.com to find out all about Joe and what's going on with that band. And of course, as soon as we find out about new music from Pharmacoast, we'll be passing that on to you guys as well. Keep you guys in the loop. And in case you guys might have noticed that at some point in the interview towards the end, Richie just seems to drop off of the planet. He did get called away, had to leave, but amazingly, he timed it at just about the time I jumped into gear talk with Joe, almost thinking maybe he had some special button on his phone to press and tell the wife, call me home right now. I don't want to talk about gear. Anyways, big thanks to Richie for getting that one all set up, getting Joe on the phone. And we had a great time talking with him that night. So before we head out of here for this week, I feel like I should play you a little bit of Veronica Freeman and the Boys. That's right. I'm talking some Benedictum. Don't know why. It's just one of those because I feel like it kind of moments. So from their last release they put out called Obey, this is a great track. It's called Apex Nation.
By my side.
Gotta love a little Benedictum, right? Great band there. Veronica Freeman, Pete Wells, all those guys in that band. Great band. Always put out some great stuff. And of course, that was, like I said, off their last one called Obey. And just so you know, heads up that Veronica is going to be doing some special guesting with the Rods on a couple of shows. And one that's already passed was here in the U.S. at Susie's Tavern on the 24th of April. She was there with them, but also a couple other select dates in Europe coming up in May. So you guys over in Europe, May 23rd at the Heavy Sound Festival, you can catch Veronica singing with the Rods, as well as May 25th at Sounds in Lübeck, Germany, and the Muscle Rock Festival in Sweden. So a couple of great dates there that you can catch Veronica the V singing with the Rods. So another week of Focus on Metal is at an end, my friends. Had a great week. Hope you guys enjoyed our talk with Joe Holmes. A lot of good stuff there between his new stuff with Pharmacos, as well as some great stories of his time with DLR and Ozzy. So, I mean, that's a pretty well-rounded guest there. We get some of the new, some of the old. Interesting guy to talk to, definitely. And I totally enjoyed having him on, and looking forward to more Pharmacos music and some more chats with Joe in the future. So I believe that next week we'll have another great guitar player on the show, as it's scheduled tentatively right now. I think I'm going to have on Michael Angelo Badio back on. We haven't had him on since November of 2013, but he's got a brand new album out. It's called Shred Force One, and it's kind of a best of compilation thing put together by our friends at Rat Pack Records, which is Michael's brand new label. Glad to have him on board that label. And a great CD he's got out. If you haven't picked up Shred Force One yet, go up to Rat Pack Records. Some nice packages up there you can get. And as I said, I think that's tentatively what we have scheduled next week. And also, if time permits, I also think we are going to be speaking with Richie Cavalera, who is the guy who founded the band Insight. They got a brand new album out. It's called Up in Hell. So my intention for next week is, like I said, Michael Angelo Badio, and then hopefully Richie Cavalera as well. But that is a wrap for this week. In the meantime, you can also keep up with us on our website, focusonmetal.net, as well as focusonmetal.blogspot.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. So for myself, for Richie, for everybody else here on Focus on Metal, just want to say, have yourselves a great metal week. Enjoy the weather as it gets warm. We're getting into festival season, especially over in Europe. And until we talk to you again next week, remember,
Focus on Metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.